Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for Warriors This Week. Brought to you by Oaks Card Club. Play smart, play at Oaks.
Durant for three, way downtown.
Now, here's Matt Steinmetz and Sean Dickinson.
All right, welcome in. Good Saturday morning to you. John Dickinson joined once again by Mark Medina of the Bay Area News Group as Matt Steinmetz has the weekend off. Does Matt Steinmetz even work anymore?
It is July. It's the off season. You know what? I am. It's always about staying ready. You never know when your number's called, so I'll try to fill in the gaps as best I can.
Yeah, we appreciate you joining me here and you, the listener out there at as well, here for the next 4 hours. Mark Medina as piped in as anybody, obviously covering the Golden State Warriors on a daily basis for the Bay Area News Group. So it's a pleasure to have him for the next 4 hours in studio. Your phone calls, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Always like to throw that out there. If you've got a question for Mark as we get his perspective on really the entire NBA offseason as a whole, but we're going to break it down into segments with all of the different news relating to the Golden State Warriors and just where they fit now into the grand scheme of things, because Mark, over the next few days, really, the NBA news is going to start to taper off a little bit, and everybody's going to head into their summer and kind of reconvene in mid-September.
Yeah, and when you rewind to the beginning of the month, obviously the biggest news happened then when, you know, it's clear Kevin Durant's going to Brooklyn, Klay Thompson's coming back with the Warriors, they do the sign-and-trade with D'Angelo Russell. But later on this month, there's still a lot of loose ends that they're tying up. Alec Burks talked with some reporters, including myself, yesterday at the Warriors practice facility. Bob Myers, the Warriors GM, scheduled to talk on Monday about everything. And hey, there was some summer league action. And so there's a lot of things that it's not quite the end of that marathon. You're still trying to make that final sprint, but a lot of things unpack as far as the big picture and some of the small details on what this means for next season.
Let's just start with the biggest NBA story, at least most recent biggest NBA story, in a 2 weeks full of wow moment after wow moment after wow moment with heavy hitters, future Hall of Famers, big-time All-Stars, changing addresses and moving around. The final piece to that puzzle, at least for now, because we don't know where Chris Paul is going to ultimately wind up, but you have Russell Westbrook going from Oklahoma City to the Houston Rockets. He joins forces again with James Harden. Just your take on how all that played out. You knew Westbrook was probably going to be on the move once Paul George requested his way out of Oklahoma City to join Kawhi Leonard with the Clippers. Just to see that and what Oklahoma City got in return with a couple of picks and some pick swaps and Chris Paul, who now is going to wind up shipped probably somewhere else. Just your thoughts on another one of those, whoa, did that really happen kind of moments?
Yeah, I think obviously the Thunder did not hesitate in going in that clear direction of a necessary but painful process of, you know what, let's start the rebuild. There's no use of trying to just have Russell Westbrook post up triple-doubles on a night-to-night basis and just barely tread water in a very loaded Western Conference. Plus, you know, Russell Westbrook saw the writing on the wall what he would be signing up for, so they had this mutual decision that it's best for both parties to part ways. So they're going to go through some growing pains, but they have collected a lot of assets. They could collect more assets, assuming they trade Chris Paul. They got a lot of draft picks, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, after trading Paul George to the Clippers. And you juxtapose that with the Rockets. Like, there's no question that there was this strong expectation that the Rockets were going to deal Chris Paul because of the reported friction between him and James Harden. It doesn't help that Chris Paul's been kind of on the tail end of his career with all these injuries and not being the same player he once was. But from a move standpoint, I don't think it fundamentally solves the Rockets' issues per se. You are now replacing a ball-dominant point guard with another ball-dominant point guard that has to coincide with James Harden. And that whole theory of, well, this will relieve James Harden and his workload and make things easier. You have another perimeter threat in a Mike D'Antoni system. I think there's going to be more, you know, I think aches and pains in any relief because Russell Westbrook is a guy who needs the ball in his hands, number one. And number two, he's not a good three-point shooter. You need to be a good three-point shooter, not only in today's NBA, but in Mike D'Antoni's system. So I don't know if the Rockets really solved anything per se.
I think you have to break it off into two different branches here. You look at Oklahoma City, they are a clear rebuild. Chris Paul will be going somewhere. I think you take them out of the playoff equation right now when you start to look at, okay, these are the eight teams that made it a year ago, and you had Portland knock it off Oklahoma City in the first round of the playoffs. They go out. They no longer have Paul George. They no longer have Russell Westbrook. They're loading up on future picks, as you mentioned. So from a Warriors point of view, that's probably a good thing that you can take Oklahoma City as a playoff team from this past year out of the equation when the Warriors' likelihood of making the playoffs, you know, that's in question, let's say, not a guarantee. I think right. You know, we both think they probably have enough to still make it, but you take a team away, that becomes imperative because I think you also have to put the Lakers with the addition of Anthony Davis, you have to vault them into that top eight. So if somebody's going in, somebody's got to come out. That seems like a natural one-for-one as you start to just kind of look at who may be in and who may be out.
Right, and obviously the Clippers made the playoffs last year. They gave the Warriors a test in the first round as an eighth seed. Their stock's obviously going to go up now that they have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And I still think even if the Rockets still have issues, they're still a playoff team. They have what it takes. They could still be a thorn in the Warriors' side and everyone else, but I don't think from a big picture standpoint it changes anything as far as their championship hopes or their ability to knock off Golden State after being able to give them a challenge these past 2 years.
Do you think the Rockets are better? Because I think that's the other question. They're a playoff team, yes. Do you think the Rockets are better than they were when we last saw them in mid-May?
You know, I think they're better from this standpoint, JD, that if nothing else, they still have the continuity with a lot of the guys. James Harden is playing his best basketball. Russell Westbrook does not have the same concerns about his durability as Chris Paul does. And right now, Russell Westbrook is on much better terms than James Harden, than Chris Paul had been at the end of the year. That could very well change, knowing how fiery and competitive both players are. So I think they're better from that standpoint, but there's still a lot of things philosophically that they have to do. And the problem is they're strapped financially to really be able to do that. But there's a lot of question marks as far as their depth. You know, Mike D'Antoni did not get an extension as he had hoped. You know, he's still the head coach, but for how long? And you always read the writing on the wall with those two things is, are they, you know, daring him to try to quit, or are they kind of uneasy about him and they want to see how the season plays out? And the moment that adversity strikes, it's very clear and apparent that he's no longer their guy. So, they're better, but especially the fact that the Lakers and the Clippers made a lot of moves to get themselves better. The Warriors have knocked down a peg or two, but they still have the continuity and the culture and Steph Curry and Draymond Green. They're still in that weird, murky middle area. They're good enough to be a playoff team, but not a legitimate contender.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. It's Warriors This Week. John Dickinson joined by Mark Medina of the Bay Area News Group as he sits in for Steiny until 1 o'clock here on 95.7 The Game. If you have any questions for Medina, you can also text in via the Chilton Auto Body text line at 957-9570. A lot to get to. Off-season grades for the Warriors. Who's in, who's out? If there's potential for Golden State to even make another move, because right now when you look at the fact that the Warriors have hard-capped themselves because of the D'Angelo Russell deal, this may be the team. And so we'll kind of get into the depth chart a little bit, how it's going to look without Klay Thompson in the fold, how the Warriors will attempt to try and get by, and then how it might look with Klay Thompson in the fold. Golden State has also signed their three draft picks, Jordan Poole, Eric Paschal, Alan Smailagić, within the last couple of days, and some of the fringe signings, Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson, those are all official as well as the Warriors round out the roster. I know, Mark, we had a chance to speak with D'Angelo Russell, someone that you covered during your time covering the Lakers, and Willie Cauley-Stein in Las Vegas at the Summer League as they were introduced to the regulars that cover the team. Just your first general impressions here, 60 to 75 second encapsulation of both those guys.
Yeah, I think compared to his time with the Lakers and my time covering him, you can see that D'Angelo Russell has matured a lot. His 2 years in Brooklyn, not only from a basketball standpoint, but from kind of a development standpoint and his own growth. I think when you're looking at D'Angelo and Willie Cauley-Stein specifically, they're well aware of they're joining a team that's in a state of transition, but there's also a lot of opportunity where because of the changing parts, there's probably going to be some different philosophies that Steve Kerr has, right? Where his whole system before was always about ball movement and get the best shots available for Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant. And now because of the fact that Kevin's out, Klay Thompson's going to be out for part of the season, and they have two guys who really thrive in pick-and-roll sets, I think that you're going to see a lot of tweaks to the offense. It'll probably be a mix of that ball-heavy oriented system, but also some good pick-and-rolls to take advantage of their personnel. It'll be interesting to see how Steve Kerr handles that whole puzzle next season.
And Willie Cauley-Stein is an interesting one. He's a guy that thought he was going to get paid. And I know a couple of weeks ago when you were in on the show, we kind of ended the show, at least I did, with a little rant about, you know, I don't think the Warriors would be all that interested in him at the money that he stands to make, or at least he believed he was going to get, a little bit over the minimum for a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein. At that price point, he becomes an option you're a little bit more intrigued by.
Hey, and JD, I hope you don't mind me putting you on the spot, but I'm putting you on the spot in a good way here. So much respect to you. When you're out in Las Vegas, Willie Cauley-Stein is talking to us, the media, and you had actually brought up that point to him of what changed your mindset of not having this thought of, hey, I'm going to get paid. It's about the opportunity and turning your career around. And he really spoke in depth on how it seemed like he didn't have his priorities straight. He needed to change what it takes to be consistent. You know, part of it, his answer was he's owning up to his inconsistent performances. Part of it, he alluded to that seemed to be circumstantial of the Sacramento Kings are not seen as a stable organization. They don't have the best culture. And when he was talking about the Warriors, he was feeling like the communication was already at all-time high. He had already talked with Steve Kerr about his role to a little bit of an extent. He had already had conversations shortly with Steph Curry and Draymond Green. And, you know, one of the messages that Draymond Green gave to Willie Cauley-Stein that really hit on the head is he really felt like this was a chance for him to restart his career. He's in a better culture. He's around some championship equity with Draymond and Steph. And he can really do what he does well, which is pick and roll. And if the fact that he's in an environment that will hold him more accountable, that relates to, I think, his style where, you know, he's seen as an eccentric personality. The Warriors embrace that. They're about, you know, being communicative. Maybe this brings out the best in what he can offer.
John Dickinson, Mark Medina, we're with you until 1 o'clock. Mark Spears is going to join us at 11:30. Gary St. Jean at 12:30. We may have a surprise guest or two along the way as well. Your phone calls coming up at 888-957-9570. It's Warriors This Week on a Saturday here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Mark Medina, Warriors This Week with you until 1 o'clock, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Mark, you know, I love to read anything and everything, right? I read all you guys, all the beat guys, but, you know, I'm a consumer of anything NBA, right?
So I was for keeping us in business.
Well, apparently somebody has to, right? Because you were telling me before the show, like newspapers are going away in Starbucks now.
Yeah, I saw them at some newsstands when I picked up my Starbucks today, but apparently that's to be discontinued in the near future.
Which is unfortunate. I mean, I like going in there. Yeah, you see a couple guys actually reading a paper in there, a la Clay Thompson.
Yeah, but you're consuming the news, so what do you have for us?
Well,
but
I consume everything, right? So I read the legit stuff, and then I read the more for fun stuff, like the Yahoo Sports off-season grades. And they broke them down, you know, Western Conference, Eastern Conference, and it's one of those things where it's easy to make a graphic with everybody's grade, and you give a little blurb. I mean, you've done grades, obviously. Everybody's done grades. You know, when you need to fill some space, right? Or you need something to write about for a particular day. Maybe you're going through a little dry spell, right? Well, I'll have some fun, do some grades, right?
Yeah, it's something in our field that the editors want the page views and the clicks.
and that gets a lot of page views and a lot of clicks. But I was looking at these from Yahoo a couple of days ago. The Warriors got a D. Warriors got a D. They were among, and this was before the Westbrook trade with Chris Paul in Oklahoma City and Houston, and the Rockets were the only other team in the West. It the Rockets, the Warriors, and the Phoenix Suns were the Suns were the only F. The Rockets got, I believe, a D plus, and the Warriors got a D. So the Rockets, I'm sure, probably vaulted up from D plus if you factor in the Westbrook trade, but a D for the Warriors seemed. It seemed a little harsh, objectively
speaking.
Yeah,
and I'm reading the review right now, and the author's words here, I think, undercuts his own grade, where he said, the Warriors did the best good to salvage a passing grade, but losing a generational talent is no less of a failure. For sure, you lose Kevin Durant, you can't say you had a successful offseason.
No.
But I think you have to look at it through a different prism. Given that the cards that the Warriors were dealt, did they make the best of their circumstances? And I can say that they did, yeah. Now, there is a fair question to ask of the risk that they took of doing a sign-and-trade with D'Angelo Russell at the expense of trading Andre Iguodala, not having as much cap space. And I think there's a verdict to be said on how that's going to play out. A lot of it determines for next season how D'Angelo fits with the team. Do they wind up flipping him for future assets? But the reality is the Warriors were feeling that as if they did nothing where they keep all the core together, and they just try to upgrade their roster using that mid-level exception around $5.7 million and then do veterans minimum deals in the draft, that it really wouldn't put them in a position to make a splash next summer. It wouldn't give them financial flexibility to make a trade this season. And going into the season, they would kind of just be trying to get themselves out of mud. And there would be a real risk of them just not being bad enough to be a rebuilding team, but not good enough to really make significant damage in the Western Conference. And I love Andre Iguodala from what he's done with the Warriors. It's been immeasurable. There is an argument to be made that, especially in a transition year, he can help build the bridge because of his smarts, his ability to help develop the bench. But frankly, his value is in the playoffs. And if there is an injury to Stephen or Draymond or even Iguodala, their chances of making that is severe. And at that point, maybe you wouldn't be able to get as much value out of him in a midseason trade as you would be able to this summer. And who knows? The stars have to align. I don't think this will work out the way it would, but there is a slim chance that he might wind up on the Warriors anyway. Because if Memphis trades him, all of a sudden the Warriors
free game
could wind up getting him on a buyout market. As of now, they couldn't do that, but there's a lot of moving parts here.
Right. If Memphis ships him to Atlanta, and just for example, and then Atlanta wants to buy him out, let's say midseason, the Warriors could, in essence, get him back. Now, there is going to be a market for Iguodala if he does get bought out of, I would say, just about every championship contender.
Right.
Or team that wants to believe they're a championship contender in both conferences.
If I'm Andre Iguodala, I'm looking at L.A. Like, do I go to the Lakers? I go to the Clippers? Those two teams could really need an Andre Iguodala to help kind of bridge the gap with all their talent experience. But also knowing that when you have a new team together and new collection of egos, you need culture guys. You need guys who can bring out the best in everyone. That's what Andre Iguodala is all about. But JD, another point I think I have to hit on with this grade is there's no question the Warriors losing Kevin Durant is a ding on them. But frankly, I don't think the Warriors really could have done anything to keep Kevin Durant. He won two NBA championships out of three finals appearances. And yes, nothing is completely perfect. You know, there's questions of how Kevin feels about, you know, the way they handled his injury. But the reality is they collaborated with all parties involved before clearing him, before he ultimately had that Achilles injury in Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Yeah, the Draymond Green argument wasn't good. Maybe there was some push-pull of how Kevin saw Steve Kerr's system. But my sense, talking to him, just being around the team, he mostly liked everything about the Warriors, the winning, his teammates, the culture, environment. I really think his departure had nothing to do with the Warriors and everything to do with he wanted to play with Kyrie Irving, he wanted to tap into the New York market, and he wanted to address some of that criticism, which I think is mostly unfair, of, hey, his legacy is diminished because he won titles with the Warriors as opposed to anywhere else. And knowing how competitive KD is and how much he wants to be the best player he can possibly be, I don't think he's consumed of having his own team and wanting to be the guy and pad his stats, but I think he cares of where he stands among the NBA greats. And I think in his mind, him going to another team and taking on a challenge helps enhance that legacy.
Here's what it boils down to for me.
I'm Kevin Durant. Y'all know who I am.
That's it.
Great soundbite.
That's it. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am, and I'm going to do whatever the hell I want.
Yeah. And
thanks for the memories, everybody.
He got what he needed right here, right? He got two championships. There could have been a third if he and Klay Thompson didn't get hurt. But, you know, that's what the NBA playoffs are all about. Sometimes the stars have to align where it's about, you know, that war of attrition. Who is the healthiest at the right moment? Obviously, the cards did not fall the Warriors' way that season. But this was a largely successful venture with the Warriors. And to say that the Warriors failed him or could have done something better, I don't really know what could have been said to convince him to stay.
I just don't see how anybody could look at the 3 years Durant was with the Warriors as anything other than just a rousing success. You win two NBA championships. You go 8-1 in those two NBA finals. He wins two finals MVPs. You got to think the Warriors, if they don't win it, they've got a great shot to win it when you look at how competitive they were with the Raptors, even shorthanded in that series. If he's healthy, for sure, but even if Klay Thompson is able to play maybe in a Game 3 or be able to finish a Game 6, the Warriors at least have a legitimate shot to maybe still win the NBA championship in 7 games. So when you look at the circumstances that are attached to the Warriors' loss in that NBA Finals to the Raptors, you know, look, they lost, and history will say that they lost, and we'll look back and maybe not remember all the details, but in the context of reviewing the last 3 years, this team was, I mean, as close as you could possibly be to winning three straight championships without actually doing it.
Yeah, and I think a few things you also have to give the Warriors and Kevin Durant credit for is, as much as it seemed, you know, preordained that these guys are going to win titles together because of the obvious talent, it took Kevin Durant to sacrifice his game a little bit, as well as the rest of the Warriors All-Stars. And I think that given that influx of talent, I think the Warriors did as best as anyone could do of everyone's sublimating their role for the common good without diminishing anyone's All-Star presence. Kevin still produced the kind of numbers that were in line with his career averages, right? And when you're looking at this season, for all the speculation about his free agency and the drama that came with that, he still played near his career averages. And I don't want to diminish the Draymond Green argument. I know Kendrick Perkins, who's close with Kevin Durant, said that that's really stuck with him. He obviously knows Kevin much more than anyone. One of us will ever know, even for those of us that covered him on the daily. So I don't want to diminish that, and I'm sure maybe to some degree it crystallized that. But I think at the end of the day, even if that incident didn't happen, Kevin Durant still would have left, because I think, again, he got what he felt he needed. You know, maybe there's times that he felt underappreciated, so to speak, for what he brought to the Warriors. But my sense is, when you weigh everything, maybe there were days he felt that the Warriors didn't fully appreciate him individually. There was that awkward moment at the parade last year where Bob Myers is making this weird joke about how Steph Curry earned his contract. And I don't know if Kevin Durant fully did, but, you know, it's championship euphoria, parade awkwardness. You wonder how much the beverages contribute to that. To a man, I don't think that the Warriors internally ever took him for granted, even when they were going on that run during the playoffs when he was out with the calf injury, both publicly and privately. They knew that things were much harder without Kevin in the lineup. But I think from the fans, the media, the outside noise, Kevin always felt that there was this narrative that he wasn't truly part of the Warriors because they had won a championship in 2015 before he was here. They got that 73-win season before he was here. You know, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green were all homegrown talent they drafted, and Kevin was already established by the time they got here. But that is nothing from what how the Warriors viewed him. There's a reason why, as soon as he left, Joe Lacob immediately thanked him for what he did not bemoan his departure, and then made it clear, as long as he is in charge of the organization, no one is ever going to be wearing number 35 under his watch.
I think when it's all said and done, Mark, it appears as if Durant's mind was made up what he was going to do.
Yeah.
And I also think you have to give him credit for coming back, if that is true. Like, if you accept the fact that you think his mind was made up that he was going to leave, still coming back in Game 5, and whether you believe the two are connected or not, risking any kind of an injury when you know you're going to get a large payday and go somewhere else, I think that's admirable to try and help this core group, even if you were convinced in your mind you were going to move on, to try and finish the deal I think it's admirable. I think he should get credit for that
without a
as
doubt.
Well.
I mean, this whole season, I think both the Warriors and Kevin should get credit for. This could have been a lot worse. I mean, that argument with Draymond was very personal. I think the Warriors obviously felt over the top. That's why they suspended Draymond for it. And there easily could have been a situation where, as much as Kevin took offense to it and to what degree it lingers, that could have been the end of the season. It could have gone off the rails where they're not on speaking terms, their game's diminished. But they were both professional enough to put those differences aside, talk things out, have someone like Steph Curry be involved, have the front office and the coaching staff put out fires, that it really didn't inhibit any of their performances. Draymond Green had a rough start to open the season because of a health standpoint, but once he came back fully healthy, he was the best of Draymond Green. Kevin Durant's stats, with exception of that Game 2 performance against the Clippers where he didn't have a lot of shots, had a lot of turnovers, he was peak Kevin Durant, and he was the best player in the NBA last season. And say all you want about, oh, well, they're so talented, but there's definitely been times in the history of the NBA that when there are on-court issues, off-court issues, that affects a superstar's performance, that affects a team's performance. And I didn't see that affect the Warriors from an on-court standpoint. Like, maybe the first two games it was awkward, but by and large, it was back to normal.
John Dickinson, Mark Medina here, 95.7 The Game with you until 1 o'clock. It's Warriors This Week, 888-957-9570. I want to come back to Andre Iguodala in a second, but first let's get to Charlie on the phone lines. Charlie, you were on Warriors This Week here on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, guys. Good morning, guys. JD, Mark, how you guys doing?
Hey, good morning.
I fully agree. I think KD leaving, I believe all those stories where him and Kyrie were talking about it before the year and all that. I think he had his mind made up. I mean, maybe the Draymond fight was like the final nail in the coffin. But yeah, regarding KD, you got to tip your hat to him. If that in fact was the case that he was leaving, he knew he was leaving, and he could have easily just said, "No, I'm not going to play in the finals. I got to protect my investment." But he went out there and he blew out his Achilles. The one knock on KD, though, is I'm not too crazy of how he's been conducting himself after he left. Just the little stuff that's been going online and on social media, but that's irrelevant at this point. Regarding the Warriors, I spoke to JD earlier in the week regarding this. I'm not going to bring up the player's name, but I'm very concerned about McKinney starting at the small forward position going forward, Mark. Do you have any ideas who they may be able to? It's either McKinney, I guess, or Glenn Robinson, and neither of those guys have really. I'm not familiar with Glenn Robinson at all. McKinney is good for short spurts of time, but he's not a starting forward, small forward. So do you have any ideas about that? And I'll take your answer off the phone. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, I not only do I have concerns on Alphonso McKinney starting at the wing position, I have concerns on who is starting at the wing position. The other alternatives are Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III, and in fairness to all those three guys, you lose Kevin Durant, no one really replaces that position, but all these different guys are role players. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. My sense is Alec Burks would get the nod because he is more experienced. He has an outside shot that's a little bit more consistent, but that wing position, JD, and I know this is something that you've been talking about a lot. This is their biggest weakness entering next season, and it's something that could be the thing that they need to address the most.
Yeah, I conduct and keep my own depth chart, right? I keep my own depth chart. I keep my own salary chart, just kind of annotate it throughout the season. I do it with a number of different teams, and I refuse to put any one player in as the starting three. I'm looking at, all right, well, Curry and D'Angelo Russell are going to be your backcourt. Willie Cauley-Stein and Draymond Green are going to be your frontcourt. You've still got Kevon Looney. You've got Pascal and Smiley Geach and Poole kind of off in a rookie pool. And then you look at that three spot, and it's McKinney or Robinson or even maybe Alec Burks, but none of those are going to do it as far as being a starting small forward. And I think you need a starting small forward even more because you don't have Klay Thompson for a good portion of the upcoming season.
Yeah, and this is where Steve Kerr is going to be interesting to see how much of a mad scientist he is. Like, I imagine going into this season, that spot's going to be kind of an open competition among those threes. And, you know, in his mind, it's hope to see someone rise to the cream of the crop there and then just, you know, change accordingly based on matchups, performances. But I'm also wondering, JD, when you're looking at the Warriors' backcourt and the Warriors' frontcourt, are there guys that are naturally a one or a two or a four that could also spot minutes at the three? Like, does he slide D'Angelo a little bit at the three? Does he slide Eric Pascal, who's normally a power forward, a little bit at the three? I think there's going to be a lot of experimenting. I mean, generally for the entire team, but especially at that small forward spot. It's going to be very interesting because not only do they need, you know, some scoring at the wing position, but they're going to be tested enough defensively as it is. I mean, Draymond can guard and cover five positions, but he can't do that all at once. Maybe in certain possessions, but not through the course of a 48-minute game. So when you're losing Klay Thompson, losing Andre Iguodala, the fact that Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell aren't considered the best backcourt defenders, beyond the wing position itself, the other concern going into the season is how they hold up defensively. Because I'm looking at this team right now, I think individually, Draymond, Kevon Looney, Eric Pascal, like those are the only guys that seem to be proven defenders. And Eric Pascal actually deserves a qualifier just because he's a rookie, and there might be some hiccups of how he adjusts to the NBA to begin with.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. What do you think of Draymond at the three? We got a lot of texts just came in. How about Draymond at three? How about Draymond at the three? I don't love that, but
I think you know, he can do anything defensively, so if you need him to switch out on the perimeter, sure, he can do that. But him being a 3-and-D guy, I'm sure Draymond's going to be working on his outside shooting, but that's asking too much. He's not known to be able to do that. And I think the other thing is Draymond's going to be asked to do a lot next season, and there's going to be a very interesting balance of to what extent do they really try to exhaust everything they can out of him because of his importance versus they don't want to burn him out. And he's already going to be playing a lot of minutes at the four, and he's also going to spell a lot of spot minutes at the five. I could see maybe some situational matchup specific plays, or maybe he plays a little bit at the three, but as far as an option, I don't know if that's a good idea.
I mean, the Warriors are, at this point, because they are up against the hard cap to the point where they can't, and correct me if I'm wrong on the math here, the Warriors right now could not sign another minimum player because they're that close to the hard cap, correct?
Yeah, I'm not the capologist that Larry Kuhn and Eric Pincus and all those guys are. I think if they really wanted to, they could do another veteran minimum deal. But to your point, JD,
there's also different levels of veteran minimum. A player that hasn't been in the league makes less than a player that has been in the league.
You hit it on the point there, and without knowing all the mathematical breakdowns, I think philosophically the sense I'm getting from the Warriors is that they want to keep that roster spot open to try to save some money and also create flexibility that, say, there is someone on training camp that they can get very well on the cheap that impresses them, or they wind up making a midseason trade that winds up being that they take more players back than they give up. That gives them some flexibility as well as the buyout market. So right now they stand at 14 regular season roster spots, and I don't foresee them making any other additions coming up to open the season.
Let's get to Connor in Oakland. Connor, you're on 95.7 The Game. Hey, Connor.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. I do have to ask, the use of your guest's phrase, championship euphoria. You know, I think that I have heard a lot from 95.7 and obviously a ton of Warriors fans around here that the team just couldn't do anything to really, shed this impression that KD wasn't really as important to the team as Steph. But you got Myers after 2018, sort of implying as much in a way that, I don't know what actually happened at the parade or sort of why that comment or crack was made, but from listening a lot and from just like paying attention, I don't think that they did a lot to clarify that. There wasn't a big mea culpa. There wasn't some big, like, no, I really should never have said that. Now, on the back end, I understand that, like, folks get excited, but that was a real bonehead move. And, I just can't ignore the fact when I hear, the Warriors couldn't have done anything, that they actually flubbed that in a major way. And people didn't forget that. Everyone was talking about that, at least online. Maybe not on 95.7, but everyone was talking about that, with the Myers quote. And I know that you guys have the sort of the KD, soundbite, I'm Kevin Durant, you know who I am, that's what it's all about. But, like, really, there's another important soundbite that doesn't get any play on this station that should.
Thanks, Connor. Well, I'm going to play it right now. And then we'll get into it here coming back. This is what has been referred to a couple of different times from the parade following last year's championship in 2018. Bob Myers' awkward moment.
And then I heard you tell Kevin Durant he can have whatever contract he wants next year.
Yeah, that was just for the media. He can't have anything like that at all.
Mid-level.
Yeah,
mid-level, behind closed doors.
Because I think last year he told Steph he could have any contract he wants, too.
Yeah.
So,
that was different. He's been here from the run, the way before days. He's earned it.
and there ended the Warriors' cohesion right there.
Well, maybe.
Fitz called it, right?
Maybe. go ahead, Mark. And we had a text as well that said, hey, has anyone ever asked Bob about the comments and if he regrets saying it? I'm actually not sure if any of you guys have asked that. I don't recall it in the times that I've been around.
Yeah, so I was at the parade, and I remember how awkward that felt. Now, to the caller that mentioned that, it's all fair points, but to clarify just some fine-tuned details here, Anthony Slater, a good colleague or good friend, competitor with The Athletic, he had talked with Bob Myers after that, and he immediately said, my bad, and I was caught up in the moment and making a bad joke, and if anyone, if Kevin was offended, I'm sorry. Knowing how Bob Myers is, he has a lot of conversations with Kevin Durant, with his management, with just every player, to put out small fires, just to talk about things. So My sense is that he talked to Kevin about that. And if you're looking at the timeline of this, JD, this was before free agency started last year. So if it was such a major thing, maybe Kevin leaves last summer. That didn't preclude him from leaving, right? So I think to the caller's point, sure, it certainly didn't help. There was sometimes that passive-aggressive undertone from both parties of that kind of awkwardness of, you know, Kevin wasn't with us from the beginning, and, you know, how do you fit into that system where before it was all about ball movement and Steph and Clay. But I think when you're weighing everything together, even if Bob didn't make that comment, I still think the outcome still would have been the same. And I think throughout this time, if you're looking at the 3 years here, JD, with Kevin, the first year, it was all about both parties wanting to make things work, and there weren't really many rough patches. He and Draymond had another, I think, argument in Sacramento and Memphis about things, but that was quickly squashed. The second season, there were times where Kevin met with Steve Kerr and Bob Myers informally, and they would always try to take his pulse. And there were times where they felt like, hey, he's at peace. He feels like he got through last season's criticism of leaving OKC, and he feels like one of the guys. And then other times where Steve felt like he was losing him, and they're trying to kind of fine tune how do they, you know, fully maximize Kevin Durant's skills without compromising the team system and what Steph can bring and what Clay can bring. And then the last past season, they were still doing that with the awkwardness of, hey, he could leave after this season. So, I don't want to say anything was perfect here, but I think given the parameters and the skills and the egos that were involved, there was a lot of things that could have gone a lot worse if it wasn't for the Warriors championship equity, the culture that they have there, and everyone, I think, including Kevin, that by and large had good intentions with making all these things work.
John Dickinson, the voice you hear, Mark Medina, the Bay Area News Group, and you at 888-957-9570. We'll come back. We'll continue to get into all things Warriors offseason. I also want to come back to something Mark said about Andre Iguodala. We'll get to that straight ahead here, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Mark Medina, Mark in for Matt Steinmetz here, 888-957-9570. Mark, of course, of the Bay Area News Group, covers the Golden State Warriors on a daily basis. More phone calls coming up here in just a second. Mark, I wanted to get into something you said about Andre Iguodala, and obviously Iguodala traded to Memphis. And there is a belief that at some point he will either get traded again or bought out. The Warriors cannot have Andre Iguodala play for them next season unless he gets traded somewhere else and then bought out. If Memphis buys him out, the Warriors are off the table. If he gets traded to another team and gets bought out, then obviously the Warriors could be on the table for a return at that point. Do you think Andre Iguodala would be open to a return to the Warriors if the circumstances allowed it logistically, either this season or even, let's say, a year from now if he decides to continue his career once his contract is up?
Yeah, I think if the circumstances allowed it. When I talked with Andre Iguodala a week before he got traded, when he was on his book tour with his newly released memoir, and when I asked him the whole question of, did he get clarity of was he going to be part of this next upcoming season or be seen as someone that they want to trade to get some assets? He was coy, as Andre Iguodala often is,
right,
but he made it clear that he understands it's a business. He won't have any hard feelings, and I suspect that he still has those feelings because of how professional he is. So I don't think the door is closed in his mind if the circumstances align that way. But I'm skeptical that the circumstances would align that way, simply because if the Memphis Grizzlies trade him, and at this point it's not clear if they will, but if they do, I suspect that the interested suitors will be teams that think that they just need another player that helps them in the championship mix, whether it's the Lakers, the Clippers, the Houston Rockets, really just name any legitimate Western Conference team that's not the Warriors that has some assets. And if they are acquiring Andre Iguodala, there's no reason in their mind that they think, okay, now we should negotiate a buyout. So I think that it's unlikely that he'll wind up in a Memphis Grizzlies uniform, but I think it's next season, but I think it's even more unlikely that he winds up back in Golden State next season because of all the rules in place for who could be available for being bought out.
Yeah, it intrigues me, maybe not the notion of him playing for the Warriors in the 1920 season, but the one thing that does intrigue me, and I said this once we knew Klay Thompson was going to be out for a good portion of next year, and the belief was obviously that Kevin Durant was likely to leave, and ultimately Kevin Durant did decide to leave. My thought shifted toward essentially a 15 or a 16-month offseason, where if you're the Warriors, you do the best you can to be as competitive as you possibly can next year. Not saying tank by any stretch, and bringing in D'Angelo Russell certainly means that you're not going to try and tank. You're looking for some firepower to put next to Stephen Curry and with Draymond Green, and you're going to try to get after it and be a playoff team. There's no question about it. But where I align that thinking with the 15, 16-month offseason is you're going to believe you're going to have a healthy Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green for the 2021 season. You're going to either find that D'Angelo Russell is a fit as a third guard, or you're going to use him to acquire, let's say, another player or two that maybe can fill some of the void of an Andre Iguodala, of a Sean Livingston in a championship core. And then you've also got that trade exception, which the Warriors aren't going to be able to use until next offseason because of the hard cap, and will be up against the clock as to basically having a day to officially use it before it expires. But that's another means to add another player possibly to the mix. It could be role players. The Warriors actually are set up pretty decently for the 2021 season to build a team that they really think can compete for a championship. And that's when maybe you want to try and get an Andre Iguodala type back then as well.
Yeah, I don't think the door is shut on that, but I think you have to keep a few things in mind here, JD. Andre Iguodala is 35 right now. He's going to be 36 next January. So you're talking about an Andre Iguodala that will be 36 and then 37 going to the middle of the season. Last year, he had been playing really well. He threw down a lot of dunks. He was, you know, a lot healthier. He didn't miss as many games. So much that Steve Kerr had said that he thinks that he can play past his current contract that will expire after this season. When I've asked Andre about that, again, Andre loves to be coy, especially to members of the media, sure, even those he knows well. But he kind of had a mixed feeling where he feels that he can continue to play, but it's going to be based on a few things. One, how much our team's going to be willing to pay him. He's not trying to get a money grab, but I don't think he also has the interest of being a Vince Carter, of just adding veterans minimum deals to play into his 40s. Number two, I think it depends on how his health goes. Even with how well he played in the regular season and the postseason here, he started getting banged up. I mean, he had that ankle issue in the Western Conference Finals against Portland. He had that really good game two performance with that key three against Toronto after, you know, banging his head after a hard Marcus Gasol pick. But he was battling a lot of hell through the finals, and you wonder how much will that carry over into next season. And then three, he's a guy who loves the game, but he also has a worldly perspective. He loves his golf. He loves his tech investments, and he's been setting himself up for post-retirement, and you wonder, to what extent will he be more in that mode after next season? That's really hard to tell at this point.
Let's get to Matt in San Jose. Matt, you're up next here on 95.7 The Game, Warriors This Week with JD and Mark Medina. Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. I love the breakdown of the Warriors. I want to comment a little bit on the KD situation. First off, I'm super thankful for everything that KD did. He's a Warrior for life, in my opinion. I think most of Dub Nation really values him and recognizes that, you know, those two finals MVPs are no joke, but I too am kind of disappointed with how he's handling things post, you know, moving on from the Warriors. And I just kind of think KD's one of those guys that he's just never going to be happy. Like, there's always going to be something that's under his skin or something that he just didn't go right. And He kind of creates his own problems with social media and in the media. So I'm just curious if you guys kind of have any perspective on how you think it'll go for him in Brooklyn. And I wish him well, but I feel like if he continues to operate the way he did, you know, kind of off court with the Warriors, he's going to continue to just be like a discontent guy that could never really quite find his space.
Thanks, Matt. Go ahead, Mark. I'll let you address that
first. You know what? You make a lot of good points, and I think that's the thing that makes Kevin Durant so fascinating. I mean, I think, you know, covering him these past 2 years with the caveat that, hey, like, we're not hanging out with these guys. We don't know their personal lives. But getting a general sense of what makes them tick in a professional work environment and seeing their day-to-day routine and their games, there's no question that he has different moods like we all do, but he shows them openly. And that he's also can be a difficult person to figure out. Like, I think how that pertains to with Brooklyn, you know, next season he's not expected to come back. So I think right now it's all about him rehabbing his Achilles, and the expectation, because it's Kevin Durant, and based on my own reporting with outside medical doctors, talking to some guys like Dominique Wilkins who have had their Achilles, their expectation is Kevin Durant is going to be normal. Because it's Kevin Durant, his game is well suited to be able to, you know, offset any lost athleticism because he has that height advantage. He has his fundamentals down on the post, on the block, the three-point shot. But I think the interesting thing is, how much does that glow of being on a new team and teaming up with Kyrie Irving fade? Like, I could very well see a scenario that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are no longer best friends because Kyrie's form of leadership might start getting under Kevin Durant's skin. And, you know, we saw how Kyrie Irving took exception to LeBron James and him being the guy. And look, that's a whole other set of conversations. I think there's a very fair reasoning why someone in Kyrie Irving's shoes would take exception to how LeBron would lead his teammates, even when counting for LeBron's stature. And Kevin has a different personality than LeBron. But just the idea of Kevin being a more proven and a better player than Kyrie, how much does Kyrie wind up thinking, no, I'm the guy who has it better figured out? Those are things that I could very well see that might contribute to him further feeling unhappy. It's a fascinating thing.
Well, and I think it's even more fascinating just based on the fact that Kevin Durant isn't going to play for a year.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, yeah, Kevin Durant comes over and Kevin Durant is with Kyrie Irving, but Kevin Durant isn't going to be playing with Kyrie Irving. So Kyrie almost has this one-year head start, either in terms of ingratiating himself to the organization and the fan base and the other players, you know, or 1 year to maybe send it down a course the way it ended up in Boston. I mean, I think both things are on the table, but either way, it's going to be weird because Kyrie's going to have a full year actually around everybody and playing with everybody on a daily
right.
basis.
And you know what? As I was saying before, I think Kevin Durant's going to come back fine from this injury.
Sure.
But just, you know, based off of my time covering Kobe Bryant when he came from an Achilles injury, this past year with DeMarcus Cousins coming from an Achilles injury, no matter how well your rehab goes, it takes a process of just knocking the rust off and getting your timing down, and especially the fact that he's on a new team figuring that out. So I think from an X's and O's and chemistry standpoint, it's almost going to be needed that Kyrie has to be at least the focal point to open that beginning of Kevin coming back. So it's a lot of interest in some plots. And, you know, JD, what I've learned through the course of the regular season, the playoffs, the offseason, the NBA never fails to entertain. So I'm sure that these storylines, there's going to be a lot of interesting episodes no matter how it plays out.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Hour number two, John Dickinson and Mark Medina with you, Warriors, this week. This is essentially our season in review, our off-season in review program. Phone calls welcome, 888-957-9570. I've already got about 2-3 full pages of notes just that I've jotted down during the first hour. You know how things come
yeah.
up? You start going down one road and then a couple of different topics come up and you want to speak to another thing.
You're going to empty the notebook, JD?
And we're going to have to empty the notebook.
Alrighty.
Over the I feel, you know, our buddy Jim Cosimore often says this, there are days where you feel like you have about a 6 or a 7 hour show to cram into a 4 hour bag. Right now, I'm feeling we might have about 5 hours that we're going to try and cram into the next three.
You know what? It's a good problem to have. It's better to have too many things to talk about, too much information, as opposed to, hey, like, how do I really drag this out? It means, you know what? It's a compliment to you, JD. You got a lot of good insight and information and expertise to share with the listeners.
What do you make of some of the things that have come out since Kevin Durant has decided to leave? I mean, there are a couple of different reports. I mean, are there anything that you think, that's kind of janky?
Yeah.
And also, we've had a couple of people text in and ask this question, so I'll kind of throw this to you in the same boat. People curious as to, you know, why is Kevin Durant not made a thank you statement to the Warriors organization, to the fans? You know, the Warriors have done that. Obviously, Joe Lacob with the statement that nobody's going to wear 35 as long as he's in charge. And you know, Bob Myers, a very classy, appropriate statement as well regarding Kevin Durant. What do you make of all of that?
Yeah, I mean, JD, I think this is the ultimate example of what keeps me humbled in this field, that you're always limited and paralyzed to an extent if you don't know what you don't know, right? And so as far as the answer to that question of why Kevin hasn't sent out that statement, I don't know for sure, and it's a question I've had, and you can't help but wonder, what does that mean? I think in fairness to Kevin, he did, as soon as that injury happened, and then once he had a surgery, he, you know, posted on Instagram his support for his teammates, wishing them well. You know, he hasn't commented extensively about his injury per se and everything that went into it. But he at least left that comment that, like, hey, I wanted to be out there and help the team. So there, I think he at least drew the line and pointed a distinction that, hey, this is a choice that I made. It wasn't like I was getting my arm twisted. But as far as, you know, what I make of what's out there, I take what Kendrick Perkins says seriously because, A, he was a proven NBA player. He is someone that doesn't speak out of turn. He's very thoughtful, and he knows Kevin Durant. So when he's saying these things, I'm sure to some degree it's an extension of what Kevin thinks. But also being there day to day and kind of sifting through fact and fiction, there's no doubt that the Draymond thing was a thing, and I'm sure that it lingered. I know at least from this season alone, talking to Kevin, talking to Draymond, talking to people that know what Steph's involvement is, it was something that they were able to at least move past to coexist on the court and still do their job. That doesn't mean it went away, but they were able to at least not affect their job, right? Number two, how he felt about Steve Kerr and his system. You've seen this, JD. There seemed to be a lot of times that KD would go out of his way to contradict what Steve would say after a post-game press conference, whether it was there'd be games where maybe Steve was upset about the way the team played and he was ripping the guy's effort, and Kevin Durant would say, no, I think we played hard. There'd be times
he by nature would, and I never totally held him fully accountable for it, because, and I'm sure you've noticed this throughout the years, there were times where he would almost always just say the opposite.
Right.
Like, he was just kind of one of those guys that would just, if you asked him the most straightforward, I'm expecting answer A, he would give you answer Z.
Yeah, and there would be also times where they would have a good win.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.